Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome to Mafia, a new podcast telling stories of America's criminal underworld.
Gotti assumed the position of head of the Gambino family.
And using the name Donnie Brasco, I was able to infiltrate the Bonanno crime family in New York City.
Bugsy Siegel is an American mob legend.
One man changed the whole texture and landscape of crime in America.
Listen to Mafia every Wednesday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Johnny Carson once interviewed Bette Davis and asked if she had any advice for young starlets wanting to get ahead in Hollywood. She suggested take Fountain. Fountain Avenue runs parallel to Santa Monica and Sunset Boulevards in Hollywood and is often used to avoid the heavier traffic. And isn't that what we're all after? A smooth run, no holdups, not only in traffic, but also in life. How do people handle those holdups, the rejections? How do they create a life in the entertainment capital of the world? How do they identify and express their uniqueness in a place where hundreds of thousands are hoping to do the same? Welcome to Take Fountain. Compelling stories from passionate people who've made it, are making it, in Hollywood. Writers, comedians, actors, filmmakers. I'll talk to anyone with a story to tell.
Welcome to Take Fountain, a podcast of passionate people working on their dreams. Compelling stories from Hollywood. Your host, Ella James.
Let's start. So, Cara Kimbrum, this is so funny because you see, in my language, I call you Cara, but it's Cara.
It's Cara.
Cara,
but I think you could call me anything, Ella, and I'd be okay with it because he sounds so good. You could call me Butter Baby, and I'd be like, ever since I was a kid, people call me Cara. And it's funny because Cara is not an exotic name by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a name people want to go with a K, Cara.
Yeah.
And that's just not my name. Doesn't piss me off by any means, but it is funny that that is the running theme. But in your case, you call me whatever.
I changed my name back in 1999.
I didn't know.
I was Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H.
Oh, my gosh.
I never got Deborah. I got Deb or Debbie, and I hate Debbie with respect to Debbie, so I just don't like it for myself.
It's not you.
Debbie. And what I find really funny here is if I say my name is Ella, like at Starbucks or on the phone or something, people will go, that's E-L-L-E-R. Since when has Ella ever been spelt like old lit yeller?
Oh my gosh, Eller? Yeah, just put me down for Eller.
It's that's the just... way I speak. Must be.
I think it sounds so pretty, like a lullaby, Ella.
Oh, that's so nice. No, I name myself after Ella Fitzgerald and Etta James.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so pretty.
Mm.
And it's sophisticated.
I used to joke that I was in the witness protection program, but I don't joke about that stuff now.
Oh, that's so funny.
Times are hard. So listen, where are you from?
Originally from Texas, yeehaw, you know.
And you have to yeehaw.
I just do it because everyone's expecting something real country. Like when I moved out here, I mean, oh my gosh, I got so much of those typical country jokes. Like, you know you're on the West Coast, right? This is a Pacific Ocean. Like people talk to you like you're a freaking retard. I shouldn't have said that, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And so I just play into it. I think it's funny.
So a man was unkind to me on the road the other day. And I put my cowboy hat on. I don't know why. And he turned around and said, you just go right round me, little lady.
Aww.
So I didn't do that very well, but he must have been from the South, right?
He must have liked it. He must have thought, oh, she's lost. Aww.
I know, but I don't know why I even put my hat on in response to somebody being unkind, but it was better than road rage.
You know what? That is a good thing. There's so much rage right now. Just do something different. Put a hat on. If a hat works.
Yeah. So tell me your story, though. So what part of Texas?
Well, I'm from a little white trash town outside of Houston on the Gulf of Mexico. It's literally like a tiny little town. My husband came to visit. He's like, do they have a Bank of America? I was like, calm down, fancy. They don't have a bank. Like, I don't know if they have a bank, actually. It's a tiny town amongst a bunch of little tiny towns on the Gulf. So it's not in the sticks, but it's very white tea, white trash.
Yeah.
And trailer parks, things like that. But there's also a mix. It's a mixed bag. But you know, there's a lot of strip clubs, a lot of churches, and yet it's near the water. Hold for sound. My husband is painting. Okay, awesome. And but yeah, it's actually a cool little place to be from. I think anytime you're from somewhere and then you move somewhere opposite, there's something really cool about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting that that you said, you know, white trash, white tea. What does that mean to you?
I mean, I think it just basically means it's a funny way of just saying, you know, poor white people in the South. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It doesn't mean they hate people. It just means, you know, not a lot of cash. We grew up eating bacon-wrapped hot dogs for a meal, and that was normal. Like, Hamburger Helper was normal for us. Like, that was just normal.
I love this. Can I just, little side note. So T.K. Madison is also an L.A. comic. He's your husband.
Yes.
And while we're sitting recording this in your apartment, T.K. is earnestly painting. But what it sounds like he's doing, because he's tearing tape and moving plastic sheeting, it sounds like he's Dexter.
Like, you're Dexter right now, honey. I was like, honey, we're doing a podcast. You're like, yeah, I'm a really quiet painter. And he's like moving stuff around and stuff.
No, okay. That's okay. That's okay. It just adds to the flavor.
I like that he's just going to do his thing.
I ask that because, you know, I've seen you on stage a lot. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be in the intro. But you are so funny.
Oh,
so
man.
Hysterical. When I say to my friends, you've got to come because Kara's going to be on stage tonight, they are never disappointed. You are just so real and so authentic. But you've often mentioned this white trash thing on stage.
Well, I love it as a character, and it is a part of like that down home thing. I mean, I don't overly read into what does white trash mean on like a moral level. It's more of a style, you know, like a down home. You know, white privilege was not my jam growing up. You know, poor, you know, and you know, very country. And I think there's things about it that are really just funny. And I, not to say white privilege is not a thing, because it certainly is, but I mean, where I came from, it was definitely, you know, we were definitely poor.
Are you the only comedian in the family?
I mean, I think I'm the only one that's on stage doing it, but like my brothers are just super funny, and they're always the life of the party, and they're just like really like jokesters, and I mean, my brother, one's in Louisiana, one's in Texas, and my brother from Texas, they're both in sales, I mean, so they have to be funny, you know?
Yeah.
And my brother from Texas is like, Kara, you know, I could do what you do. He's like, I could totally do it. I'm like, well, get your ass on stage. Let's see how it goes when you have to actually, you know. He's like, ain't nothing but a G thing. I could do it. They all think they're funny, but they are. They're funny people, you know.
What brought you to L.A.?
Flashy lights. You know, Mama wants to be a star, Ella, just like you and everybody else. You're just like, I'm gonna go west and see what I've got. And then I got a job at Starbucks. Wasn't exactly the idea of a star. And yeah, you know, I've done a million Hollywood hustle jobs. I call it the Craigslist Chronicles, like all the little jobs I've had. And here I am now just doing stand-up, thankfully, and living off my husband. Woohoo! California dream.
He says something like that in his stand-up, which is, oh gosh, can I remember it? Fortunately, he's here. TK, help me out.
TK, what's your joke?
Yeah.
What's that joke about?
Come over here, baby.
Your wife working because she gets to do...
I said, my wife doesn't work because we got married. We both decided that she didn't want to.
Right.
It's not quite that succubus, but a bit.
Yeah.
A bit of it. TK.
You can
honey.
Go now.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, it works. That's the main thing.
Well, we work together, but he definitely, when I say we work together, he does definitely more like 70% of the workload. I do about 30%, which works for me. So
yeah.
Him, I don't know. We're still It's been 5 years, so.
5 years married.
Yes.
Where did you meet?
We actually met at a good old-fashioned sports bar down the road, and found out then we were comedians. We're both from Texas, and that we found out the same night. But we didn't, ironically, meet in a comedy club, which is typically how we should have met, and we met at a sports bar, which I think is good, because dating other like comics or entertainers and you meet them in their element, it's kind of an exaggerated, or just like a, it's not the whole picture of who the person is, and then you can have a talent crush, or you can kind of want to you see them in their element, whereas you really just need to fall in love with the person, not their act, not their talent. You need to fall in love with who they are. So I think it was actually good.
Yeah,
you know.
Did you start doing comedy out in Texas, or did you start here?
I had tried it a few times, but I didn't really necessarily move. I knew it was always funny. Funny finds you. I don't think you set out to be funny. I think it's a survival skill, and so I think it kind of finds you. And I think every girl kind of just wants to be pretty for a while, right? They just want to be like a pretty girl. And then that shit wasn't working out for me, and I got funny.
Oh, that's just crazy. And let me tell you, she's just the most gorgeous.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you,
Ella. I do that thing on stage where I say to the audience, you know, who are generally so much younger than I, and I say to them, you know, for God's sake, develop a personality, because those looks aren't going to last.
Oh, it's true. Right? I mean, I have so many friends that moved out here, and they were playing the hot girl roles. And, you know, time keeps on slipping. You, like, eventually you age out very soon. Those are very competitive roles, to just be, like, the pretty girlfriend or the hot, you know, or the leading actress based on just, like, the ingenue look. You know what I mean? You've got to really come up with different skill sets. I mean, everybody should.
Well, it is in life.
Than anybody.
I mean, that's art imitating life.
Yeah. I mean, really? At any point, I mean, if you want to act, you better really get range. And if you want to do anything, you've got to bring more than the table. But in L.A., I mean, it just, you can get sexy and bulk here. It's just like they're falling from the sky. I mean, even when you think you're having a thin face day, or if you're feeling hot and you might be like a 10 in Detroit, you know, you come to L.A., you're a sub 2. Like, you just, right. you cannot set up shop being the hot chick. You got to move on.
I have never seen as many attractive men and women as when I moved here. Initially, it was like walking through a magazine.
It is weird. I think you become used to it and numb, and then when you leave and do something on the road or you go back home, people are like, well, who do you think you are wearing your hair like that and, you know, wearing those high heels? I'm like, I think I'm like an LA 3.
Right.
This is not a big deal. But other places, it's like, well, you think you're a big deal because you're, I don't know. I mean, and you know, you know how it is in L.A.
Well, let's talk about that. L.A. is so much about confidence, don't you think?
Yeah.
And I hate the fake it till you make it thing.
Mm.
But it also, you're an actor too,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you go to an audition, you do all the preparation, you have the coaching, and then you walk in, and you leave all of that behind, and it's all about confidence, not brazenness, not arrogance, but just being really confident about who you are. So
yeah.
There's no room for that kind of down-home, shy, vulnerable person who's trying to get people on side. You're not trying. You're showing them that you've got what it takes. And that is uniquely LA, isn't it?
I think so. I don't know. This is going down one of those conversations where I kind of find that in this town, what is original is what's countercultural, what's counter the energy. So I feel like everyone's so ambitious here and so hungry and so thirsty, and everyone kind of is working so hard to be everything that when you kind of go in and you're really comfortable with who you are and you know yourself and you aren't really in that desperate mode, I think that reads really clearly to people, because it's a law of attraction. It's also just like a God thing. Like, you go in knowing Ella, and Ella knows Ella. And Ella's not trying to be, you know, everything to everyone. She's just, I'm Ella, and I'm, you know, you're going to do the role and be the part. But I think that that is attractive, because so many people, it's like there's a stability. There's like a, in that confidence, there's like a something really strong from just being who you are. Yeah. And that is something that is, shouldn't be a novelty, but it's almost a novelty here. Like, I find, like, some of the all the things I've kind of gotten through doing stand-up or whatever, the gigs I've gotten, they kind of found me just doing my thing. And I think that there's something to that when you're in your element and you're just comfortable with your voice and who you are, as opposed to, I mean, I've had so many people I've met and friends I've met that they've gone through evolutions of trying to be a million things because the fear of missing out, or I've got to win, I've got to produce, I've got to blah, 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 and it drives you a little crazy, and then you're kind of a shadow of who you really are. And I think that's where LA goes wrong, where people need that confidence, but not in, like, because I can be all these things, but because I know who I am. That is a, I think that's really strong.
LA sorts out the wheat from the chaff. Really,
yeah, it does. Oh, yeah.
Room.
Oh, a lot of stuff
like,
weeds out.
In Australia, I've always been a big girl. I've gone up and down, and if anybody can find the thousands of pounds that I've lost, by all means, you just hold on to them. Right?
yeah, please.
You know, over and up, down, up, down, up, down.
Oh,
and
I know all about that.
I worry when people lose weight, because I know what happens next. You know, and I wish it didn't.
What do you think happens next for people that lose weight?
I think it comes back.
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
You know, I think it's a lifelong struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just accepted me now.
Yeah.
You know, I hate that I can't wear the clothes that I really would love to wear. And I hate that when I walk down the street, well, actually, no, I don't. I don't even know what it's like for somebody to go, well, are you 16? it's never been my wheelhouse. So, if, you know.
You know, but I you know, were, and not. I don't know if people have seen you that listen to this or not, but you were a very beautiful woman. It's not like you're some haggard woman that look.
You
look very put together and you're very elegant and you're pretty.
Yeah, but we all want something that we don't have. And I would like to be a bikini model just once.
You just want to give it a try.
You know, if I had a perfect body, firstly, I think I'd be in half the day just feeling it and saying,
yeah,
that's what that feels like.
Yeah.
I went to an audition here in Hollywood that will make you laugh. My agent said, this is for a hostess of a club, you're British, and a guy rides in on a horse and you're the hostess and greets them and this is your line. And I'm like, okay, fine. And I read it and it says age range 18 to 25. And I ring her back and I say, oh, darling, I think we've got a problem here because I'm not in that age range. No, don't worry about it. I call the casting director. They're looking forward to seeing you. So I walk into the cast and I'm fully dressed out in the evening. I've got more Spanx on.
Yeah.
They had to cut me out of that with a box knife.
Oh, right? Yeah, been there.
You've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I've got the full floor-length gown. I'm all cleavage to the wind. I could
love
rest
it.
A gin and
love
tonic
it.
On there, you know.
I love it.
High heels, and I strut into this place, and there are 20 women who are all under 24, 25, and they're wearing like sparkly romper suits, backless, with little tattoos on their back, and you know, you can see the cheeks, not the face ones, the romper something. God, you're just so gorgeous. What am I doing here? Anyway, so the casting director looks up from a clipboard and she says to me, I'm sorry, what role are you here for? And I just looked at her and I pulled myself up to my full 5'5" and I said, the horse. Because I thought, how can I win here?
Wow.
Like, it was just one of those crazy things where you're suddenly, I'm not describing this properly, I was surrounded by what Hollywood is.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, I didn't get it, but I felt like I won. In a way.
I definitely think you did, because when you go into something and you're like, this is who I am, take it or leave it. I mean, people love that. I've had so many things by just having a good time and going, hey, you know, this is maybe my 2-minute audition, but I'm going to enjoy myself. Because, you know, you go on so many, it's more like, let's just give them a great performance. Let me have a great time. And
what's the most fun thing you've ever gone in for or got?
Well, to be honest with you, through my stand-up, I was referred to this hidden camera show, and they'd been looking for, like, the last actress they needed for this TV show for a year. I'm like, how hard is it to find? I mean, I know 1,000 great improv actresses. They're like my friends, you know? And a friend of TK, my husband's, referred me and sent in my stand-up to them, and they cast me, and the next week, I found it on Wednesday, that weekend I was in New York shooting the sizzle for an A&E hidden camera show. And I'd never done anything like that. And I just had to, like, play off people and try to, like, you know, do these crazy embarrassing things. I was like, sign me up. I love this. You know, this is my jam. And then it went to pilot. And then the next, like, a few months later, I'm back in New York, you know, with a driver and hotel. And I just think I've made it. And, you know, I thought, this is it, guys. My life's changing. You know, sell the car, sell the kids. Don't contact me on this number. I'm going to have to get a new one. Like, I just thought this was going to happen, you know. And we did several different shoots. And I just thought it was for the A&E, show. And unfortunately, it didn't go to air, but I remember thinking it was just exciting. It was one of my first things, and it just came from me doing me.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow. And I kind of feel like if you're one of these people that just doesn't fit in the box, you just got to keep doing you. And I think God's going to bring about the right thing. Something's going to happen that's going to reveal to you in the right timing, the right project or the role or the whatever.
Yeah.
It's going to kind of come together. You know, it may not look what you thought, but I really believe that, you know?
I want to talk about your singing. We're going to get to that. Because you've burst out in a song a couple of times and you do it on stage as well, and I love it. But I want to talk to you about, so you're in New York and you've got a driver and you've got a hotel and it's exciting, right?
Oh, yeah. I thought I was, you
know, and it's going to get picked up and it's going to get picked up and it's going to get picked up, and that building excitement where you are spending your first paycheck 53 times.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to buy this. I'm going to pay this bill. I'm going to do this. And I'm going to get mama a this. And right?
Oh,
all
yeah.
of that goes through your head.
Oh, my gosh.
You get the call
where
it's not going to go ahead.
Oh, my
How
gosh.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I feel like anybody in the game has probably will and eventually multiple times be down this path, and then maybe they'll make it and they might be down that path again. And it was my first time to kind of experience the buildup, because it was a big buildup, and I kept thinking, I'm going to be a series regular on this new hidden camera show and my life's going to change and everything's going to be, you know, that went, and it was just, it's disappointing. You got to pick yourself up and you got to kind of go, well, there's going to be something else. And you kind of just check it off as like, well, I had it coming. You know,
She had it coming.
Yeah, right. So let's forget
and
the.
Off we
yeah,
go.
And off we go. So it kind of was like, well, I guess this is the reality of anybody working towards anything. They're going to experience, you know, setbacks, or that's not a setback, but you're going to experience, you know, no, or wait, or not now, or, you know, no. I mean, Kevin Hart talks about all of his haters that think he just is dominating this industry and he didn't deserve it. He says, you know, honestly, I heard for like, I don't know, 15 or 20 years, he heard too short, not funny enough, too small, you know, this, that, and the other. He said, I've heard no for 20 years. Mm. And now he's a mogul.
Yeah.
And he's empowering a bunch of other people. Mm. So I think that's amazing too. People don't really know that. And I'm not, I mean, I haven't made it. I'm just like everyone else, still in the hustle and but I'm enjoying life. I'm not living for it, as opposed to people that are just like, I can't enjoy life until I make it. And I don't believe in that. I don't believe life is going to happen when I quote unquote make it. You know, I'm not guaranteed those things. I believe life is now. I want to live and love life and live my purpose now. Whether it's a small scale, a medium or big scale, I'm going to do it now.
Do you have some ideas of what your life might look like, might feel like, what your living might be like when you've, in inverted commas, made it?
I don't know. I mean, I have ideas like everyone, right? You're hoping that, I'm hoping that I can get really good hair extensions. Honey, that look real good, honey, because, you know, mama sometimes it look like a train wreck.
Number one. Extension.
Yeah, I would like to get some really good makeup. No, but more importantly than that, I would love, financially, I'd love to empower, like, my family and help them out, some of them that need help. And I would love to, you know, really love to launch a bunch of projects I've always wanted to do on my own that take capital. And I'd love to empower other comics and people I know that have great projects. And, you know, just really, it's not supposed to be just about you. It's really supposed to be, like, a resource that flows through you to help other people. And ideally, that's what I would love to do as well. Like, I'd love to do my jam, singing, acting, stand-up, live shows, blah, 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 TV, film, blah, 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 take over that world. And then that flows just like every
line. You might even have your own range of hair extensions.
My own form of Spanx. Yeah. I mean, I've got, I mean, honey, I mean, I also want
to zip up once.
Yeah.
Paint on.
I want.
Why can't they do paint on Spanx?
Oh my gosh.
If they could do paint on, like spray tan, like spray on Spanx, where all you had to do was hold your breath in for 30, well, four, maybe 5 seconds, right?
And then just, boom, suction.
And then as it dries, it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Gosh, that sounds amazing.
Wouldn't that be great?
I just dissolve it.
Maybe and then you just stand under the shower and it does. No, that's no good, because if you sweat, it could dissolve on
Yeah, maybe not water, but there's got to be some kind of tech. And listen, people are going to the moon. They're doing Mission Mars 1. We could do some Spanx.
If men wore Spanx, they would be much better than they are now.
I know. Right? What a low.
Let's talk about your singing. Are you trained?
I am, yeah.
Okay. So when was singing the first thing for
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's your heart. You know, I always say, like, comedy is my personality, music is my heart. That's kind of what I've always thought. Like, I think your heart, you know, the Bible says, you know, music is the key to the heart. And you think about, music really connects people. It really transcends so many differences. It transcends. You don't have to speak the same language, and you can hear someone sing something. It could give you the chills, or it can, like, really touch you. And I think music is a heart thing. It's very heart. But I started singing at a very young age, and that was my jam. I just, you know, anytime there are people around. I mean, I remember literally, it's so crazy. Crazy home life, guys. Not going to get into that. But I just remember I found the yellow book pages, you know, the yellow, old school before Google, you guys.
People used to deliver a phone book to your home.
I know.
That gave everybody's business names and addresses.
I literally would go through the yellow pages and start calling numbers. And I started my own campaign. I think it was like third grade. And I would call. I don't even think my mom knew doing this. I was like, hi, my name is Kara. I'm a local artist. I'm hoping to get on the radio. I'm going to sing you a little bit of Madonna song or Mariah Carey, you pick. And if you like it, let me know. I'm going to put your name down, and then I'm going to send all these names to the radio station to get on the radio.
So third grade, how old is that?
Is that like 8 years old?
Okay.
Maybe.
You know, Jane Fonda says something along the lines of that she had to go back to her seven-year-old self.
Mm.
The pre-sexualized, the pre-objectified little girl who's confident to pursue her dreams because nobody's told her no yet.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's you the same thing.
Yeah.
So I went through my late mother's things, and I found this piece of paper that she'd kept from when I was about seven, and it's a foolscap piece of paper. Do you have foolscap here?
I don't know what that
is. It was like a lined writing pad.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, but quite long. And it was all done on pencil, and it said, "Come to our concert." And this was a concert we lived in public housing, and this was a concert that I'd put on near where they collect the rent. And all the kids had to do a dance or sing or something.
Aww.
And on this thing, I'm like collecting 1 or 2 cents for Ostcare, which is like a charity thing.
Aww.
It's hysterical because then I've got no admission, then that's crossed out, no admittance, then that's crossed out. And then I've gone, what do I really want to say here? Admittance, 2 cents, right? And then could mothers or other people please bake cakes? Mothers or other people? Oh, my God.
That's such a visionary, though. I mean, it starts young.
But I only say it's not a visionary thing. You know, I think when we're little people, we have a really clear idea of where we are,
mm-hmm.
of where we're... I mean, I wasn't only the organizer. I had at least 3 acts in that show.
Oh, come on. Hey. And for your encore performance, the producer, the director.
Everybody out of the way, Mama's coming to town.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
All right.
Yeah, but I think there's something very true about that. Childhood embodies something in us that is, I think, very ageless and eternal. It goes back to something deeper than we realize. Yeah. There's a purity in that place of just like you said, not sexualized. You haven't been told no a million times. You haven't quote unquote grown up. So there's that wonderment. I really think childhood is connected to spirituality. I think it's connected to your art. It's connected to your goals and your visions. And you have to, as an adult, you have to fight to preserve that.
Mm.
You really do.
When was the first time you were recognized for your singing?
I mean, as a young kid singing. I mean, I mean, like at parties, my mom, you know, she'd throw me in the middle of a room and be like, "Kara, do your thing." And I just loved it. Mm. I couldn't get enough, you know. And then... the big thing that I had ever done prior to that, well, after that, was my fourth grade talent show. I sang Mariah Carey, and I just remember, it was like home, you know, being on stage and singing.
Which song did you do?
I sang Make It Happen, which is about her up-and-coming song, about having faith, and about, you know, and I just love the song. And I just remember, so, you know, a little backstory is my mom was, I want to say... I don't really know how to say it, but I think she you know, struggled with mental illness. I think that's a nice way of putting, drug dependent on prescription drugs, not all the way there, you know,
so you lived with a large degree of crazy.
Oh, beyond. So she was kind of crazy, very unstable. So she'd drop us off at a babysitter's house and I'm like, I don't know when she's coming back, that kind of thing. And, that was my debut night at my talent show. And she dropped me off the babysitters. And I mean, we had a head full of lice, dirty little kids. And I was like, listen, bitch, you got to do your crazy another day. I got a performance I got to get to. And so I broke out of the babysitter's house and ran across the street to my house, and I snuck in and broke into my own home to get my outfit ready. And then I ran to my elementary school. I jumped a ditch and I got my shoes dirty. I remember that. And then I was like, I'm here. The show must go on. And I towed that shit up. I mean, I got on stage and just did my dance, did my song, itched my head, you know, singing woo. And I just remember like nothing was going to hold me back. And it didn't. Like as a kid, you don't feel sorry for yourself. You just go on. It's like, it's beyond you. You're like, nope, go into this thing. And I just remember the song was called Make It Happen. And Mama made it happen. You had to go, you know.
To win?
There wasn't a prize. They didn't do that. They did like a show, so, you know.
What a matchup.
And what a team, Mike. Metro PCS and the iPhone SE for $0 on a network that covers 99% of people in the U.S. Oh, impressive.
Play with the best. Switch to Metro PCS and get a 32-gig iPhone SE for $0. Metro PCS. Coverage not available in some areas, plus sales tax and $10 activation fee. Claim based on talk and text. Not valid for active numbers currently on a T-Mobile network or active on Metro PCS in the past 90 days. See store for details and terms and conditions.
This is Take Fountain with Ella James.
So, coming to Hollywood, what was the focus? Was it going to be comedy? Was it going to be singing?
I didn't really know, because at that point I wasn't singing as much, and I was also just kind of figuring out, like, I hadn't really done stand-up, really. I just was like, I know I need to be here. I was going to school in Texas. I was, like, 19. I was doing, like, a junior college for music, and I was like, what am I doing here? This isn't even the kind of music I want to sing. It's opera. I don't really want to be an opera singer. I'm not really into school. Like, at that age, I just didn't want to sit down and read books, you know? And I was like, why did I choose to go to a junior college? It just was like, I need to go to LA. So I packed up the goldfish, hypothetically speaking, or metaphorically speaking, and I just, like, moved out to LA when I was 20 with, like, $300. And then I was, like, here. And I was like, oh, God, I got to figure out how to stay alive, you know?
That's scary.
It is scary. 20 years old, and you have $300. By the time you get here, you've got $300. And then, like, I came out here. I had two friends I just met in Texas that wanted to pursue the arts. They came out with me, and we all rented a studio apartment together, three of us. It was a tiny studio. And after we paid our deposit, I had no money, a cent. And I was like, uh-oh. You know what I mean? What am I going to do? And there was, like, a deal at McDonald's for 35-cent cheeseburgers. I was like, that's what I ate. And then eventually I had some money coming in from I would work at Starbucks in Texas, so there were some checks coming in, and I transferred to a Starbucks in, you know, L.A. So it worked, but there was, like, a week when I had been out here for about a week, maybe 2 weeks. I was like, uh-oh.
Have you ever asked yourself, am I insane? Should I be doing this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, especially when I was younger.
Yeah.
Or many times over. I think anybody does. Well, when things are hard and your resources are on the line and you're like, how am I going to provide for things? You're like, oh, gosh, I should have thought this through, but I've got my 20-year-old brain not being on life skills yet, thinking, what did I do? However, I think God uses all that, because if you'd have known how hard something was, or if you'd have known, you might have not have come or delayed it. So I spent my growing up years, my adulthood has always been in LA, not in Texas. So I, like, had to kind of grow up, you know, figuring out how to get an apartment, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it all works out, but definitely. And then you know, you're out here doing the grind for a while, and then you're like, wait a minute, I'm not a star yet. Then you revisit the place of, am I crazy? And then you get past that because something happens, and you're like, I love it.
And then, yeah.
And then it's like a cycle. Repeat. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I spoke to a friend the other day, and I have often made reference to the fact that I wish, periodically, I wish that I was the kind of person who could get a job at the Bank of America, leave at the same time every morning with my lunch in a plastic box, catch public transport to work all day, come home, cook a meal for my family, watch television, and then on Saturdays take the kids to soccer and to visit mum. Do you know, that is how I paint normalcy.
Yeah.
And
I think for the most part that is, outside of this type of industry or
but
big
I
cities.
Love how I see that as my alternative. So a friend the other day said, you know, I'm going to have to give this up and just get a job. And I said, but why is it just? What if there's a third alternative? What if there is something great that you could do that would satisfy and fulfill you even more? Because forget the money.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's one part of it, but it's the fulfillment, really, that does it. And as much as fulfilled as I get from banking and spending, these are a few of my favorite evenings, it's being on set.
Mm-hmm.
It's knowing what you're doing on set, bringing somebody's words to life, working with a director, being in the light, knowing all of that.
Uh-huh.
That's the fulfillment. And I don't know whether I could get that servicing an ATM or...
Probably not. I mean, I don't know what that third option is, and I know there probably is stuff we can't imagine that might, for some people, they can, you know, maybe do this thing part-time or that thing part-time. I mean, for a lot of my friends and for myself for a long time, it was like a million side jobs and then still allowing me the freedom to do what I loved. Mm. Nothing glamorous in that other than it is what it is and it's a means to an end, and then you're still doing your thing. You're getting on stage at night or you're doing other shows, you're auditioning or whatever. Mm. And that's, I think, is for a lot of people. That can wear people out too, though. It's definitely a faith journey for me. I mean, there's really no answer. I mean, sometimes something will happen for someone. You'll go, oh, wow, that's really cool how that does kind of that intersection of I can pay my bills and I still get to pursue or do, or this is somewhat in the field. And I'm, you know, I do see that for some people mm-hmm. where it's that kind of third option. But I don't really don't know what that looks like for everybody. I mean, who does, right?
I'm toying with this notion at the moment, and that is, I've often believed that the greatest change in our lives comes through other people. That I look back on the major events, both good and bad, and it's not been necessarily about anything I've done. It's been about meeting a person who could move me in a different direction.
It's always about relationships. Right. I always feel like it is.
But I'm now also looking at the fact that it's when you really let go. When I look around people who have transitioned, because now I've been here a few years and I'm sure this has happened to you, the longer you're here, the greater the chance of the fact that you've actually hung around with somebody who's now doing it.
Well, you're absolutely right. I can't remember. Honey, do you remember who said, the actor who made it later in life, and he said the only thing he did different than his friends was he did not leave Los Angeles. He said the only reason I made it was because, he goes, I had a lot of talented friends, but the difference between myself and them is that I never left. Was that Samuel L. Jackson or was it Dustin Hoffman?
Anthony Hopkins made it late in life.
It was one of those, one of the greats that said, really, he goes, I never left.
Yeah.
And I do see people that have done well, that have, are getting breaks, and I'm like, wow, I knew them before this, that, and the other. They haven't let up, you know? There's that theory, and
it is magic, isn't it? I mean,
it feels like it. It feels like Pandora's box. That's why I'm a big believer in community and friendship and living life now, because, like you said, relationships are powerful. They also feed your soul. And we're not made to worship our dream. And that's where we go wrong a little bit, is that you it's in your heart. You want to do it so much. But when it becomes your God, it becomes a thing you live for, it can be a very unfaithful God back to you. It can really let you down. And I think, like, in the meantime, look, I love to party. I love having people in my house. I love cooking. I love going hiking. I love going to nature. I love, you know, getting into trouble. And I love people. So I don't want to hibernate just working on projects and getting in shape so I can go on auditions and just work on my music. And then it's just party one Kara until I make it. That's not how I want to live life. I think, actually, like you said, all the things that I've gotten, the little breaks or things that have happened for me have always been through doing my thing and being around people.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to it, you know, and it's a way to alleviate and to, you know, not do this life alone, because out in LA, it could be very anonymous. And what's weird is that you come to LA after a few years, you feel like there's a party all the time around you and you didn't get invited. Feels like there's this excitement and hunger in the air and adrenaline, which is awesome, but you didn't get an invite to it. And that can be crushing. It can be very isolating too. And it's a weird place for people because they can feel very depressed in a very sunshine, fun-filled atmosphere and go, oh, I know I want to be here, but I just feel so alone.
And what's wrong with me?
Yeah. Loneliness is a big one out here, because this type of industry requires you to focus on yourself, focus on your stuff, get yourself in shape, get your blah, 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 you know, work on this, work on your brand, work on your social media. And then it's just a bunch of, you know, on your computer, on your social media, and you're not really doing life. You're not really social. You just look like it.
No, also, I think there's that thing that all of your promotional materials are you at your best.
Oh, come on. It's the highlight reel.
And so from your reels to your headshots to everything, you know, and you're surrounded by them because you're having to deal with them on a daily basis. It's not like I've lined my bathroom with them. So, you know, God, you're just such a gorgeous thing.
Yeah.
No, but seriously. And then I wake up in the morning and I look at myself in my 10x magnifying mirror and I think, no, you don't look anything like that person.
Well, who does?
Right? But that is I think that used to be a uniquely Hollywood kind of thing.
I don't think it is anymore.
Facebook,
Instagram, everything,
and all of those things, I think all women and men, it's not just a female problem either, all men and women are now identifying themselves visually, right?
Yeah. It is a weird kind of poison. It feels kind of like you have to really check it. So I'll put a, you know, I could really do my makeup amazing. I don't like to brag, y'all, but check my Facebook out at some point. My Instagram at some point.
Like, what? You haven't gotten any effort for me at all. What's that about?
What do you mean?
Well, for the podcast, darling.
Oh, what do you mean, darling? What you want me to do?
Where are the false lashes, darling?
I know. I'm about to go work out. I know. Well, that's the thing. Like, I love to transform. I think transforming is actually more fun than the actual finished product for me. I love to see the before and afters. I love that. I look at that makeup. But my point is I don't buy into it. So I'll put up some pretty pictures, and I'll put up, like, a one of me just doing life because it's real. People connect to that. Yeah. I think it's inspiring, too. You know, I put up a photo on Instagram where it was just we were having a date night, and I was really trying to be glamorous. And I took a photo of me, and I was like, shit, that looks amazing. If I do something, I'll be like, I don't know who that is. That's how good. You know, slap a filter, do my angle, suck in my cheeks. And then I did a before picture, and I said scroll to see the before picture, and it was me. I look like a Fraggle Rock, no makeup. It does not look recognizable, but I love that personally, and I think it's inspiring and fun. And it's also like I'm not buying into it completely. Like, I know what goes into it, and it's fun. And I like to do that almost for my own self, you know, for just a reality check. And people love it. They laugh so hard. It's just, I'm like, look, if I could do it, you could do it.
I think you should do a makeover on me, and we'll film it.
Oh my gosh, let's do it. I love it. I love doing people's makeovers. Yeah. I love it. Oh my gosh. We'll pick out a look you want to see, and we'll do it.
Oh, totally.
Look, we could literally transform your face. Yeah. That's what's exciting. Okay. It's fun. Not that you need to, but it's fun.
So I wanted to talk to you about something that I know that you did. Mm-hmm. Reese Witherspoon in the movie where she walked the Wild.
Oh, the Pacific Crest. Yeah, Pacific Crest Trail.
Painting TK. Thank you, darling. Wild.
Yeah.
So you relive that walk on that trail.
Yeah.
Is it the Pacific Northwest
Trail? No, it's a Pacific Crest Trail.
Thank you.
It starts at the border of Mexico, goes all the way into Canada, to Vancouver, pretty much.
How much of it did you do?
I did about, collectively, I've done about 500 miles now, but the first stretch was about 400, close to 400.
What inspired you to do that?
Good question. Who knows? No, I actually saw the movie Wild with Reese Witherspoon, and it was like one evening, and she had her story of grieving and dealing with her stuff, and that was interesting. But really, that was a cool part of the story, but most of it, I was like, what? What is this trail? What's through hiking? What's long distance hiking? Who does this? Why would you want to do it? Oh my gosh. But it just started the mind seed planting of, like, this romanticized idea of going off the grid and adventure and spiritual and then the community. So I started to research it, and I fell in love with this amazing documentary about it. You can find it on YouTube. It's called As It Happens. If you look it up, these two dudes went on this journey, and it was so beautiful. And I woke up in the middle of the night after watching that movie at like 3 a.m. And I was like thinking about the trail. And I woke up, and the first thing I said at like 3 a.m. out of my mouth was, God, I can't do this. I don't want to do this. I'm too scared. And I caught myself. I go, wait a minute. God's not making me do anything. What is this mental? And I thought, oh, shit. I'm in for it. I feel like I'm supposed to do this trail. And I was terrified. And I really feel like God was getting me ready in my spirit to go on this journey. And I didn't know exactly what it was for, you know? So eventually, like, what was it? Like maybe 6 months later, I'm on this trail hiking, and I met people, and I had this crazy experience. And then it was amazing. It was amazing. You know, I did my portion that I wanted to do. I thought I was going to do the whole thing, but that was not at all going to be the case. Like, I got out there. I did about 2 months, and it was life changing. Well, no, never on my own. There was always people around and people I hiked with, but it wasn't like I had predetermined that. I met one girl initially through a Women of the PCT page, and she was like, I don't want to go alone. I was like, me neither. So we were going to start the hike together, having never met. And we started at the border together at Mexico. But then you realize once you're out there, there's so many hikers that are doing this because there's a season you kind of have to do it. And you kind of make friends and you buddy up with people and you do what they call leapfrog. Like, you might hike by yourself for a few miles or a day and then you end up running into the same people. So you're always kind of at camps with people.
Okay.
Kind of. That's how initially it starts.
And then the second time you did do it with a friend.
I did. I went out with a friend of mine who had been wanting to do the PCT, and I had taken her out as like a friend to kind of help her, and she got into it and loved it.
Okay.
And we did a big chunk.
Hysterical footage of you coming across a rattlesnake.
Oh my gosh. Like, the first time I'd done the PCT 2 years prior, it was a drought year. There was, like, believe it or not, just like, I never saw snakes, like maybe one.
Yeah.
Rude Awakening this year because it was such a great rainy season. I don't know if that had, maybe there's more footage, more animals for them to eat. I guess there's more foliage. I don't know what it was, but I mean, every day I saw about three snakes, and they will wake you up. They will make you wake up and soil your shorts, which never happened, but came close. Because you're about to step, and you're like, oh, my gosh, give me a heads up.
And there's nothing like that adrenaline.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like you suddenly look up, and your car's heading for a stopped car. That feeling of slamming the brakes on.
You just forget there's these beings out there, and they're doing their thing, and you're in their space, and you're like, oops, sorry, I almost stepped on you kind of thing. Isn't that crazy?
So what does the future hold for you?
Oh, my gosh. Who knows? I've heard that thing that said, I just noticed your pantyhose. How pretty are those pantyhose?
They're leggings.
They're so pretty. They have these stripy,
little stripy,
sexy little leggings. Looks like Chicago.
Oh, thank you.
You're like jazz. All that jazz.
And all that jazz.
Yeah, yes, what your legs
are.
I'm
trying to get you to sing.
Oh, I will. Do you want me to sing? I'll bring my little guitar over.
Yeah. Oh, that would be
lovely. Yeah, I'll go grab it. So, if you heard
this, talk quietly amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
We've got Da Vinci over there.
I know, right?
Matheson.
Have you heard this expression that says, you know, you tell God your plans and God laughs. Have you heard that?
Yeah, but I say planning is God's comedy.
Yeah. So there's always that like that mystery of like, you know, you're doing your thing and you've got your like 5-year plan or whatever, and God's like, okay, ha ha ha. So I still think you need to put out goals and stuff, but then you got to be loose about it. You got to kind of like be
plan
flexible.
Plan for the future, but live like there isn't one.
Yeah. So I think I lean more now on grace and more on just like God, Jesus, take the wheel. Because I mean, I think as long as you're living every day, like what you're meant to do, everything's going to kind of come together. Like if you're supposed to be singing, sing, act, whatever, and get in projects and do stuff. But the big picture thing, you run your race and you kind of stay out of the result. You're like, you know, that's up to God. Like the big picture's up to God, because that causes too much anxiety for me. It makes me overthink all the details and what I need to do. I just be of service, live love. Not to sound like a hippie about it, but I really do think you kind of have to like almost do it, but then let go. Like I have a big performance Monday night. That was huge. This thing I'm doing Monday night is a huge performance.
Yeah,
that found me. And it was just doing my stand-up. And I'm very nervous.
And this is you singing with Steel Panther.
I'm singing with Steel Panther. If you guys don't know them, look them up. They're a hilarious comedy music band. They started off as a cover band of like all the hair fun metal songs of the 80s. And then they started their own songs and originals. And they get like huge artists to come sing with them. I'm singing the song Pink sang with them. Sweet Child of Mine, and I'm so totally nervous about it. It's Monday. I'm nervous.
But having nerves is...
It's good.
It's part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll get you guys my guitar.
We'll just... walks across, gets guitar.
Walks across.
So we normally take a photograph at the end of the podcast to put with it. So it's okay. I'll just photograph my leggings.
How about you give them one of my...
professional headshots.
Yeah, because this is a little too gritty.
Can we hold it up next to my face to make it look like we're together?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, good. Here we go.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's Kara.
This is a song I wrote, and I hope you like it. Let's see if it's... Yeah, here we go. How does that sound as far as... Is it too close, Mike? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you guys a little bit of this. This is a song I wrote called The Garden.
That is so beautiful.
Aww. Thank you, Samara.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a longer song, but I just want to keep it going.
Oh, no. Just gorgeous. Even more beautiful than when you're on stage.
This is really from my heart. It's more on stage. I'm normally singing, like, parody songs, and I belt it out a little bit. But this is stuff I wrote, so it's like, you know, it's like from my soul, from my soul.
But you have such a special sound.
Aww.
Do you get taught to do that thing?
I think you learn...
That thing. I don't know what that thing
is. I don't know.
But when you... It's like a yodely thing.
It's kind of like a, yeah.
I'm so technical, right?
I think you kind of find your voice, just like comedy or whatever. You kind of play around and you're like, oh, this is what feels good. It's what feels right.
You going to write an album or?
It's funny because I've recorded some of this as like a demo a while back and then I've kind of shelved it and I want to re-release it and re-record it and do music videos and just see where it goes, you know? All that jazz.
I just add all that jazz. Is that the third time we've done that?
I think so.
It is. Third time's a charm.
Hey, baby.
I wish you every happiness.
Oh, back at you, man.
Every success, but I think the happiness thing is the thing.
It is good.
This has been delightful.
Oh, yeah. Ella, I love you. You're so sweet. And Ella, if you guys don't know this, I'm sure they do, but you're hysterical as well and stunning. And you guys got to check her out at one of our shows, hopefully.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, darling. So sweet.
You've been listening to Take Fountain with Ella James. For more, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to the podcast at Audio Boom, Stitcher, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting app. This has been another quality podcast production from Bytes.com.
From Audioboom comes Covert, a new podcast that delves into the murky world of spies, soldiers, and top-secret military operations. I'm Jamie Rennell, and together we'll discover the real stories of history's greatest classified missions, told by the operatives, soldiers, and journalists who experienced it firsthand. Follow Covert on Spotify, or subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorite shows.